I've got Bob Chapman with me today, and Mr. Chapman is 73 years old. He was born in Boston, Massachusetts, and then attended Northeastern University, majoring in business management. He spent 3 years in the U.S. Army counterintelligence, mostly in Europe. He speaks German and French and is conversant in Spanish. He lived in Europe for 6 years, off and on, 3 years in Africa, a year in Canada, and a year in the Bahamas. Mr. Chapman became a stockbroker in 1960 and retired in 1988. For 18 of those years, he owned his own brokerage firm. He was probably the largest gold and silver stockbroker in the world during that period. When he retired, he had over 6,000 clients. From 1962 through 1976, he specialized in South African gold shares. He and his family lived in Salisbury, Rhodesia, now Harare, Zimbabwe, and Johannesburg, South Africa, from 1970 to 1973. During that time, he did a great deal of further study in the South African mining industry. Mr. Chapman belonged to the Traders Association for 25 years. He did all his own trading during the South African year. Some was done directly through Johannesburg, but 95% was done through the London brokerage firms. Hence, he has extensive contacts both in London and on the continent. Starting in 1967, Mr. Chapman began writing articles on business, finance, economics, politics, having been printed and reprinted over the years in over 200 publications. He owned and wrote the Gary Allen Report, which had 30,000 subscribers. He is currently owner and editor of the International Forecaster, a compendium of information on business, finance, economics, and social and political issues worldwide, which reaches over 10,000 investors and brokers monthly directly, and parts of his publication are picked up by 60 different websites, weekly exposing his ideas to over 10 million investors a week. In 76, after the Soweto riots, Mr. Chapman began buying North American shares exclusively for his clients. At that point, only a handful of American-Canadian issues interest him due to the high dividends of the South African shares had paid out over the years. And Mr. Chapman is well known, and he has spoken at many workshops. And in June of 91, at the request of business associates, due to the retirement boredom, he began writing the International Forecaster. So, I've heard you many, many times on various programs, and you are a very busy man and have a wealth of knowledge in numerous areas, it appears. But one thing that kind of struck me when I was reading your bio was the fact that you wrote the Gary Allen Report. That I didn't expect when I read that, because I don't believe I've heard you speak of that. Have you?
From time to time when it comes up, Gary and I were partners in the publication. He wrote the political and social issues, and I did the financial issues. And actually, we had about 40,000 subscribers, if I remember correctly, but it's long ago. It doesn't make any difference. Gary died in 1986, and I kept the publication going until about 1989, and then finally I turned it over to his wife. And they just turned it over to another company that writes newsletters, and they fulfilled for the rest of it. Gary's death was not expected. He had diabetes, and all of a sudden, you know, the leg had to come off, and it was a terrible ordeal.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yes, I also wrote my first article for American Mercury in 1967. And in that article, I wrote about the coming free trade and globalization, which would be used to destroy the U.S. economy in order to bring it down to a level where American citizens and Europeans, for that matter, would accept world government, and we were way, way, way ahead of everybody on that. And they started the program in 1982 to destroy America's industrial base, and you're seeing it today with the apparent soon to be demise of General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler. 85% of our manufacturing out of the country, and the wealth of the nation is based upon its manufacturing potential, and finances and financial things don't make it except for a very, very small group of people, as we've recently found out with the credit crisis and the collapse in the economy. They finally are admitting now that there might be a recession, which started almost 2 years ago. The problem today with communication is that the media is controlled by a small group of people, and the media only tells you what they want you to know and hear. And so the public really doesn't know what's going on. And even if you tell most of them, they don't know anyway either, because they don't understand. And so there's a tremendous education gap among people. It's not only in the United States, it's throughout the world today. And so you have people who are in command of the media, and so they can pretty much get away with anything they want. And we're suffering for it, because even the intelligent and well-educated in America, they don't know what's going on, and they don't question anything.
Right. And the reason why I brought up the Gary Allen, because he wrote, "None Dare Call It Conspiracy," am I correct?
That's correct, yeah, and I did not work with him on that book. I knew him starting in 1964. We became friends, and we met at a meeting, and our minds were in the same place, and we saw each other over the years, and then finally, Gary said, "Gee, I'm doing this publication. I really don't like the person I'm working with, so do you think you'd want to do something along those lines?" I said, "Sure." As a matter of fact, I never even took any income from it. All the income went to him.
Interesting.
Because I had a brokerage firm at the time, and I was making quite a bit of money, and so I didn't have an extra need for it, and everybody knows that writers don't get rich, and so, or most of them don't at least, and so that's the way that worked.
Well, why another? Did that interfere at all with your brokerage, or did it enhance your experience with it by dealing in these issues, or was it something that you were already very much aware of and that you two just kind of got together and shared the information?
Well, back in the early 60s, I knew what Gary knew, and very few people knew it, probably several million people in the entire country, who was behind what was going on and who really controlled government. And he wrote about it, and I talked about it. I started writing a monthly newsletter for my subscribers in about the mid-1970s, and I did that for about 15 years. And so, and a lot of the, I wrote articles for the Bull and Bear and many, many other publications, and as a matter of fact, the last article I wrote for Bull and Bear was in August of 1988, and I remember it distinctly because I described how the United States government was manipulating different markets and how they were doing it under the aegis of the working group and financial markets, and nobody had ever even heard of it at that time. No, they suspect that the government was interfering with markets, and that's where when it began. And they started with gold. That was the first market that they went after, and they sort of half-heartedly did it up until about 1990, and then they really got serious. And they have suppressed the price of gold for almost 20 years. Gold today should be selling somewhere between $2,500 and $3,000 an ounce, and it's not. It's selling at $740 or wherever it is. And the reason for that is that the U.S. government, as well as other central banks, have been selling off their gold over that period of time, and most of them don't have any gold left, and some of them have gold left, and I don't believe the United States government has very much left.
Okay. I that was about the time period that I actually got into being a Series 6 representative. preventative. And I was never really very active at it, but it did give me a little bit of a understanding of what was going on, even though it shouldn't have, because they don't really train you in those aspects. They just tell you to, you know, what you have to know to pass the test, and then they kind of turn you loose. And one of the things that I've noticed in some of the publications, when I would read on finances, I don't recall seeing that much honesty in those kind of monetary publications. Am I right, or am I just...
No, it's a mixture.
Mm-hmm.
The mindset basically is that the public is told by usually articles, informationals. They're told what the brokerage companies want them to hear, and very often the information is very correct, but the agenda, you have to know what's going on behind the scenes. Example, a research department writes up a favorable report in XYZ Corporation, which is selling at about $42 a share. And lo and behold, the writer of the publication, the brokerage house, says, well, we like this stock, so you should consider buying it. And the public doesn't know that they just bought 2 million shares at $40 a share, and they want to retail it into the market and make a commission on it, and in the belief that the stock would go higher. And they call secondary placements or offerings, and I used to see that all the time, and usually the seller was an institution who knows more about what's going on in the company than most other people, and they're selling for a reason. And you see all kinds of things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the inside information is probably acted on in the market about, I don't know, 1, 2, 5 million times a day. This poor Martha Stewart went to jail for something that is absolutely rife within all the stock markets of the world, and that's inside information. And it varies anywhere, all the way from people in the brokerage industry and banking and corporations and in government. Everybody takes advantage of it, and the poor public doesn't know what's going on. That's why people have had these 401ks and IRAs and other retirement accounts, and they haven't shown any gain, or some of them have losses, say in the last 10 years, and they can't figure out why. Well, the reason why is that the insiders are in there making the money, the people with the inside information, and there's really no way you can control that. So, you know, if you don't like that that's the way the markets are, well, you don't participate. But if you're in a retirement plan, it's not that easy. And even, we'll take CalPERS as an example, which is the biggest one in the country. They're invested in a number of things, but about 90% of what they're invested in is in stocks and bonds. The remainder is in hedge funds and commercial real estate and other semi-liquid ventures.
Do you find, now you primarily were in the gold and silver market, am I correct? Is that what I was...
That's correct, yeah.
Right. And I noticed in your publication, you know, you mentioned Barrick Gold, and I know that happened to be the company that George Bush Sr., when he left office, kind of connected with. Is that right? Are you familiar?
Yes, that's correct. And there were a number of other Bilderbergers on that board, Brian Mulroney, and there's a whole litany of insiders. And Barrick was an oil company, and it was converted into a gold mining company. And Barrick was set up and funded by the people who control the United States government from behind the scenes in order to suppress gold prices. And how company did that was that once a company was formed, it was well-funded, and they went out and bought gold and silver deposits, and they then hedged against the properties. And how they did that was that they would borrow money for expansion from a bank, and the bank would take gold in the future for delivery as collateral. And the thing about Barrick that's different than everybody else is that in the contract it said that if need be, they never have to pay the gold back. But most people don't know that. So Barrick Gold has been the largest of all the hedgers at selling gold forward that they haven't produced yet. And they did that to make money, and they also did that to bring more gold onto the market.
Well, it kind of looks like, if I'm correct, when I was going back looking at Barrick a little bit because of several of the people that were involved with it, and somehow there's been some spinoffs from it that went back into oil or gas, like Lexham, it seems like, if I'm correct.
Yeah, but he also had the spinoff into commercial real estate as well, which was a disaster.
Uh-huh.
That was Peter Monk's baby. And Peter Monk's got an interesting background. He and his partner had a company in Quebec that was government-subsidized, making televisions. And it was a disastrous situation, so he and his partner blew their stock out, and then the company collapsed, and he and his partner, Sandy Gilmore, went to Southeast Asia and stayed there until the statute of limitations were up on the charges that were against him for stock fraud and misappropriation of funds and things like that. Peter Monk is a criminal,
mm-hmm.
and there's just no two ways about it. And after the statute of limitations were up, he was brought back. These people funded him, along with the royal family in England, incidentally. And so he evolved in this Barrick Gold because there was no way they couldn't be a loser. And at the same time, they suppressed the gold price for years. And that was the intention. And they had learned in the early 1980s that when you have a problem like the United States had, such as the collapsing economy, that if you're going to remedy that, you have to keep the price of gold down, because gold acts as a barometer, and that barometer tells people that there's a problem because the price of gold goes up. And so in suppressing gold, what they did is they stopped questions by people about gold. Because gold wasn't moving up, there was no reason to question why it wasn't, nor was that beacon there for people to see that there was something dramatically wrong within the financial system. And Paul Volcker said many times that the one thing that they didn't do was illegally suppress gold prices, because it was illegal at that time. Since August of 88, it's been legal. In fact, today it's even more legal under the recent legislation. The Secretary of the Treasury can do anything he wants. I mean, you might call him a financial dictator. And what we've evolved into here is a corporatist fascist government run by a bunch of fascists from behind the scenes who happen to control the world scene. It's not only in the United States, but it's throughout the world. And these people cooperate with one another, and they plan with one another, and they have their little groups. And they have the communication system, and they have meetings at the Bilderberger Group and the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and this is how it all works.
Well, it must be kind of interesting for you to be aware of this, and at the same time you're working in an avenue that is so heavily controlled or manipulated and infiltrated by people that have a criminal background or have other means to want to control the world or bring countries down, destroy their economies. How do you deal with that, Bill?
Well, I'm the antithesis, and I have a very thick skin, so it didn't bother me the 28 years that I was a broker. I was tolerated within the business, and that was about what it was. But after I came back as a writer, I was not tolerated anymore. And I've had terrible problems with the government. In actuality, they started ganging up on me in 1967. And it never let up. Never let up. And they don't want me telling people the truth. And there's other people who do what I do, but not very many of them. And not very many of them, or none of them, have had the background that I have in counterintelligence. And once you're in that, they think they own you. And they think that you belong to them forever because they trained you. And that isn't the case. And so they have a special dislike for me. Not only my writing and my vitriolic continual attacks, not only on government, but the people who control government. And at the same time, I'm doing 20 programs on the radio every week, and we're reaching millions and millions of people, and that really upsets the United States government.
I've caught you on in quite a few, and I've often wondered how you can, you know, put together your publication at the same time trying to, you know, get this exposure out there to get people, and even reading your publication, you seem to have an optimism there about what the potential can be if people are aware of what's going on. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, I do, but you know, hope springs eternal. I'm very, very much an optimist in spite of what I know, which is very, very, very negative, and I don't even tell the subscribers a tenth of what I know, and because I couldn't handle it. And it's a burden, but I guess in my case, I get used to it. My blood pressure is 110 over 70, and my heartbeat 65, so obviously I'm not excited about anything. And I just take it in stride. I would think, like perhaps a professional person in law enforcement who all day long, every day, is exposed to criminals. And you get used to it. Maybe you never get used to it, but you can work within it. And so I never had a problem with that. And I think the reason why is, in order to do what I do, you must understand the criminal mind. And if you do that, and able to channel what you're doing, then you can be very, very powerful. And that's what's happened.
Uh-huh.
And I know that's what's happened because I have other writers tell me, gee, we only wish we could do what you do in the volume that you do it in. And, of course, that's discipline and working 14 to 18 hours a day. But obviously I thrive on it, so it's okay.
Well, you must have a reason for working this hard to do this. I mean, particularly since you said you retired, but...
I didn't. I couldn't handle it. I think it's because I've got this knowledge, and I'm trying to impart it to people, and I am helping an awful lot of people, and it costs them next to nothing, you know, for the publication to learn what they need to know, and I help people individually, lots of people who aren't even subscribers, and my broadcasts over the year to all over the world, and we have subscribers all over the world, is very good because it informs people everywhere, so to speak. But the recent turn of events tell me, and I predicted the stock market fall, I predicted 9/11, Iraq, Afghanistan, the rise of gold and silver. I picked the top of the stock market in 2000 to within 2 weeks I've had short positions, betting stocks are going to go down. Here for the last 3 years, people have made unbelievable amounts of money, and they still are. And I've just been very, very fortunate. My timing, at least so far, has been exquisite. And that's all of that experience of being in this for so long. And I do it to help people, but I also do it because I have a tremendous dislike for the people who are doing what they're doing to the public of the world and have done what they're doing for the last 1,000 years and getting away with it. And I don't like that. And I will badger these people until I can't anymore. And I have great fear for the American people, the people of the world for that matter, because we're entering into a time now where we're in a deep recession, we're going into depression, the stock market and bond markets will collapse, the only viable investment will be gold and silver, and I think that it's going to become either one or two things or both at the same time. Either America and other places are going to have revolutions, and not unlike that which occurred in Paris in the late 18th century, but also I think that the people who control government are planning a major war, and I think it's going to start next year, and it'll be much larger than Iraq or Afghanistan or Korea or Vietnam. And the reason why is they need an excuse to be able to misdirect people who are experiencing this financial and economic failure. And when you have a problem like, gee, we've got a war with Russia going on, and I'm going to have to get over there, and because the government's going to draft me to do that, and I might get killed, well, people are more worried about that than they are the next meal that they've got coming. And so wars are to distract people. And you look at history, it's easy. In fact, I wrote a letter to Harry Schultz this morning, who's another, the dean of the newsletter writers, who asked me some questions. And historically, it's all there. These people have done the same thing over and over and over again. And so there's a good chance we'll have a major war. And that is, draft the people, get them off the street, keep them from revolting, and get them over there and get them killed off as well, because these people believe that there's too many people in the world, and they would like to cut the population down 50 to 70% if they could. And also at the same time, there's a great deal of money to be made in wars, producing the implements thereof. And then, the whole world is bankrupt. The financial system is broken. And so, with war, you can make an easy excuse for the repudiation of debt. And that's what all these things is what they're going to be up to. That's what they're going to be doing. Now, the only thing that can stop them from doing that is that there's revolution within the United States. If people finally realize that going through Congress doesn't work anymore, and it doesn't, and the government lies about everything, Wall Street and banking and corporate America is in on it, and you have the haves, and most people are have-nots, you get a real problem. And that problem usually spills over into the streets. And that will happen over the next few years. So it's my guess that they'll have their World War III before it spills into the streets. But to my way of thinking, as an expert on the subject, I see no viable means of stopping these people short of revolution. And they know that. And that's why they're going to have another war.
Well, I think that they're trying every way they can possible to try to create it. And my only question is why it hasn't happened sooner. Do you have any ideas on that?
Yeah, I think one of the main reasons, to quote Brzezinski, about 3.5 years ago now, he was the one who laid out the Middle East program and that whole movement through there. The plans were laid in the early 1980s, and I know quite a bit about them because I read all the periodicals that they produce. And arrogant as they are, they have to tell each other by pounding their chest and telling each other what their plans are. And so it was all done back then, and those plans were on an evolutionary trail, and then finally we had the Gulf War, and then that was followed by the invasion of Iraq. And Brzezinski said, all of our well-laid-out plans have gone asunder because the people in the White House are messing things up so badly. And so to answer your question, the reason it didn't come off sooner, because we had a bunch of idiots running things. That whole neocon gang didn't know how to shoot straight. And that's what the problem was. And that's part of the American branch of the Illuminati.
So you don't think they're really working together with...
They are, but, you know, they can't oversee everything that the President of the United States does, you know, 24 hours a day. I mean, there are unilateral decisions made by President Bush and Dick Cheney and others around them. And they didn't work out right. They messed the whole thing up, and Brzezinski was right. And that's why Obama won the election, because he's the protege of Brzezinski. In fact, his campaign was run by Ian Brzezinski, who was the son of Sabigno.
But I thought I'd also heard...
Sabigno is one of the top people in the Illuminati.
I thought I also heard that one of his other offspring was working on McCain's. Is that...
That's
right?
True, yes. That's true. So, but, you know, McCain, you know, he's my age. You know, to be a president, you have to have stamina. You got to be younger. And it's very, very hard in today's world. You know, if it was in 1804, the demands weren't as great. Maybe that's not a good time to pick, because they had the War of 1812 when England tried to take America back. But we'll try 1830, and that was Andrew Jackson's time, who was one of the greatest presidents, and because he stopped the bankers cold in their tracks. And but anyway, had Mr. McCain been president in 1830, it probably would have been doable. But the pressures are too much today, and most people can't handle it. They can't handle this tremendous give and take that goes on all day long, every day. And, you know, the decisions you see made are not just the easy ones you hear about. I mean, how about all the sub rosa activities going on in intelligence and counterintelligence? I mean, people don't even know about that.
I
was involved in it. I know what we did. And quite frankly, a great deal of it was illegal. But, you know, you're young and you got to argue. I mean, there's a thing called court-martial.
Right.
Or either that or summary execution. So you keep your mouth shut.
I was listening to an interview on one of the RBN or something of that sort, and it was an FBI agent saying he was at a meeting, and he said that there were more intelligence people there than there were members. I always thought that was kind of funny, because, you know.
Well, what's happened to law enforcement is twofold. It's either I will follow orders no matter what they are, because they're legal at that time, or I need to collect my paycheck, so whatever they tell me to do, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And what's happened in that process, particularly in the process of using people who are criminals to get information, it has taken our law enforcement agencies into the criminal world, and they have become part of it in many respects. And it has criminalized our law enforcement system.
Right.
And now what they're trying to do is militarize it as well. So then we'll have militarized criminals chasing criminals who may not be criminals.
Well,
the whole thing is mind-blowing. And I have a nephew who this month is retiring after 30 years with a major police department as the assistant chief of police. And he wants out for those reasons, because of what it's evolved into and the direction in which it's heading. And my poor nephew is only going to make $120,000 a year for retirement for probably the next 40 years, because people in my family live a long time. And so that's going to cost the state in which he lives and the city in which he worked an awful lot of money.
Well, I live in an area where there's a number of prisons, and that was one of the things that I observed. In fact, I used to umpire softball with a lot of these men that worked at the prison, and I found that I actually applied for a job there, and I realized sitting there that they had me in a, I can't describe the term of what it is, but you're sitting at a table with three or four of them on one end and you're at the other end. And it was very, I can't think of the word I want, but it's intimidating is what I wanted. But when I walked out of there and I realized that if I had to become like that, and you have to start thinking like the people that you're around, I realized that I couldn't do that. I mean, that, because you do have to start being like those people that you work with, and that criminal mind, I can't.
What you're saying is well said, and you're saying it from your heart and your being and your experience, and you're right. I found out when I was 8 years old. When I found out at 8 years old, mind you, that out of 365 policemen who were in the city that I was in, only two were not on the take.
Yeah.
I mean, and so I got a real early education living in a poor neighborhood, poor immigrant neighborhood at that, in a large eastern city. And I learned very fast all the angles and how to operate and how to survive. And fortunately, I had an extraordinarily good mind, and I did very, very well in school, and I had a tremendous advantage that other children never had, and I still do as an adult, because there's very few people in the world who are as bright as I am. And, you know, God made it that way. I didn't. But it's a gift you get, and it's one of the reasons I continue to do what I do. Because everybody wasn't given the gifts that I was, and I'm giving some of it back. But you see the path early if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fortunate because I knew by the time I was 10 or 12 what I had to do to live a decent life and not live on welfare like I did. And so this great deal of ambition and competitiveness that came forward, and people like me don't know how to give up. I mean, there's no retreating. It's engage, attack, and conquer. And that's my mindset. And so it really explains what I went through and where I am today. And you've experienced the same thing in a different way later in life.
Right. Now, when I sit back and I study the minds of the people that are running the world, and I mean, because they put everything out that they pretty much plan on doing in print, and if it isn't in print, it's in history. And it seems like, you know, the criminal mind, you know, once you've done something and it works, you're going to go back and do it over and over again. And until we as a people start making these criminals accountable, they're going to continue. And you're right as far as, you know, if we don't stand up and exert our rights as human beings and deserving of our labor, then they're going to continue to, you know, take it from us.
Yeah, but the problem is that the avenues have now been cut off. They control all the avenues.
Right. Oh, I understand.
And that is like putting a rat in a corner.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do that. You let them run around the room, and you get a bit of shot at them. But these people are so powerful and so arrogant that they have to put us in the corner. And they're going to have you know, the French Revolution, the Bastille, all over again, unless they can start a war real fast. And that's the box that they're in. And they are running scared because never before has the information on the Illuminati and all of these people who are involved ever had the public exposure that it's had over the past 10 years, particularly 15 perhaps, since the advent of the internet and talk radio and all of the programs that I go on where the people are being told the truth. They can't handle that. And they're afraid that what they're doing won't be successful, and if it isn't, they're all going to die, and they know it. Because there's people around like me who are going to have courts to find them guilty for what they've done. They've been looting and robbing and criminalizing us for a long, long time, and if it comes to a halt, and we have an opportunity to adjudicate these people, they're all going to end up in jail and lose everything they've got, if they're lucky. You know, mobs aren't usually that caring. They just try to find a lamppost and a piece of rope.
Well, well said.
And this is what they're facing. They are terrified. Don't you think that they're not? But they, you know, sit back and talk to each other in their smug way. They'll say, well, we'll just start a war with Russia. And that's what they're trying to do right now. In Kosovo, which is a disgrace to mankind, the people who are running Kosovo are absolute criminals. But they're in good company with the criminals who run all the rest of the major governments of the world. And you now have northern Georgia, Iran, Syria, Lebanon, North Korea. I mean, you've got all kinds of flashpoints, and most of them are pointed towards Russia. In fact, they tried to suck Russia into invading and occupying all of Georgia, and they were too smart to do that. And I worked against the Russians. And I want to tell you something. They are not dumb. Their counterintelligence operations were every bit as good as ours. And they were very successful as we were. And they were probably far more successful at propaganda than we were. And they're trying to suck Russia into war because they need it. And that's the way this is headed. And what disturbs me is the other newsletter writers, they don't see any of this. They can't project themselves into the third dimension using history as a guideline and current events of what's going on and the way you see things headed. And it's very, very disappointing to me because I need help.
Right.
There's a handful of people out there who understand what's going on or on radio who write, and that's it. I mean, I need another 20,000 like me, or 100,000.
And people listening to you. I mean.
Well, I don't want to have to do the whole job. I'm an old man. I mean, how long do people think I can continue to do this?
Right. No, I commend you on it. But you know what? I am running into more people like you. It's just that we're not multiplying quite as fast as we need to at this point in time. And it is, we really all have to be pulling our own weight at this point. But, you know, you have to realize that it's only 1 to 5% that actually control the world. Is that correct?
No, it's less than that.
Oh.
It's 1% or less.
Ah.
And, you know, the public of the world doesn't get it. They just don't get it. And some of them don't want to get it. Some of them can't get it. Half the population of the world is dumb. They're sheeple.
Right.
Now, we can do what we can to save them, but they got to do something for themselves. And they're not listening. And the last election was the last election that they ever had a chance of changing things. They didn't do it. The game's over. The answer, in the streets. Whether they like it or not. Either that or they live on their knees.
Right. But that
become enslaved by these people.
Well, and
that's where they're headed.
Part of the thing I hear from people is, well, I can't do anything about it or whatever. And well, that if it only takes 1% to control the world, then we don't really have to organize that many either to really take it back. I mean, at a certain point, it'll just kind of the 100th monkey syndrome, in a sense, if people will wake up. Do you think so?
What's going to get people going in America and Europe and Mexico, Central and South America, Japan and even China? What's going to get them going is an empty stomach. And we're headed that way. Because they're going to lose their homes, their jobs, their cars. And then the government's going to tell them, well, look, we've got a job under our new national FDR-like program. And John, you're going to work in San Francisco. Nancy, you're going to work in New York City. And your kids are going to go to school in Chicago. And each year, for 3 weeks, you'll be together as a family at one of our government-sponsored camps at Lake Charles in Louisiana. Or something like that. This is what they've got planned for people. People will be told who can breed and who cannot, how many children you can have, what course of study they're going to go into. There will be only one religion. It'll be the one that they designate, which will be worth nothing spiritually. It is the neuterization of the entire human race, except for the masters of the universe, the anointed ones. And that's where we're headed. And people can't see that because they can't or don't have the ability or don't want to have the ability to project themselves into the future.
You know, I've been trying to kind of get people aware of the private property issues that are going on here.
There's no such thing anymore.
Well, that's an ultimate...
They can do anything they want.
Right, right.
You know, people talk about confiscation. Well, they can confiscate anything they want, anytime they want. You saw what they just did. They just took $1.3 trillion of taxpayer money and gave it to the banks, who created a financial failure. They're rewarding the criminals.
Right.
Why? Because the people who were giving them the money are in league with the criminals. That's the Federal Reserve, the Treasury Department, the people within government. Congress is bought and paid for, and those who are not are compromised for one reason or another, which I won't go into. And then you have a handful of stalwart people in Congress like Ron Paul. What is there, 20 of them? 30 of them? And that's the kind of government you've got.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. There's no way out. And incidentally, I've been doing this for almost 50 years.
Really?
So I got a lot of experience. When I tell you there's no way out, there is none.
Well, it's kind of looking that way, isn't it?
So, you know, unemployment, I'm going to change my figures in the next issue.
Mm-hmm.
10% at the end of 2009. These government statistics now, the U6, which are the people who just lost their unemployment checks because they've run out, that figure is 11.8% right now. So you add 3% onto that and you get 14.8%. And then the long-term unemployment right now is 14.8, so that puts you up at 17.8. And before this is over, long-term will be 40%. The U6 will be somewhere in the vicinity of 34, and the short-term unemployment will be over 30%. That'll take the people into the streets.
And as far as, you know, all these figures, the one thing that has kind of struck me, now you mentioned some of them you can't follow, so where do you set...
I do 350 pieces of research a day.
Mm-hmm.
I read 37 publications in 5 languages. People subscribe to the International Forecaster because it's the best publication of its kind in the entire world. And how do I know that? Because my contemporaries tell me that. How do you do that? I wish I could do that. The best newsletter writers in the world, they communicate with me all the time. And so, you want to know what's going on? You subscribe. You don't have to think. All you have to do is read it. I've done all the work. Anything that's important, anything that you have to know, is in that publication twice a week, 30, 40 pages each time. And if you take the time to read it, there ain't nothing you don't know about what's going on out there.
It's phenomenal. I was reading it, and it's, you, you do really put a whole lot of information in that thing. And then I noticed at the end, you know, and when you were talking about your blood pressure and the sort, I noticed that you kind of get into some of the nutritional aspects. Is that something that you're you follow or you sell or?
Well, let me just explain to make it simple.
Okay.
For 45 years, I've done over 100 vitamins, minerals, herbs, and hormones every day. I've done chelation for over 20 years, probably over 500 of them. And I've never been ill in my life except the flu. I don't take shots of any kind. And I might have a glass of wine with dinner. I don't smoke. Never have been a heavy drinker, and I don't use stimulants at all, coffee, tea, anything like that. And so it's expected if you have a healthy body and you've kept it that way that you're not going to be ill. Pretty simple.
Well, and that's my understanding, and I've definitely believe in the herbs and diet and the whole
Well, that's why we have that column in there, and we have an article every issue by a young lady who is a herbal specialist. Mm-hmm. And I put articles in there because there's things that I see. I'm using a lot more links than I used to because of the internet, because people will write an article on something and I'll read it and I'll say, gee, I can't write it any better than they have. And I just put the link in there. And so the amount of information that's in the publication each time is phenomenal.
Right, right. And I really do recommend people look into that, your publication. And, you know, and one of the things when I was, I noticed that Barrett came up a lot. And in my, the research that I do and whatever, I started following some of these corporations and whatever. And I found that almost as revealing as anything on learning what's going on in the world and following some of the characters around, because they certainly do change and affiliate themselves with a lot of different companies. And some of them, you know, affiliate themselves with the worst of the worst and the best of the best, which makes it confusing for the public if they catch these photo ops where they're with one who is, you know, maybe some ranking religious leader, and, you know, and they don't see what's going on in the aspects of the criminals that they associate. Does that make...
Yeah, it makes sense. And what they have is a connection, and a connection usually is a consul in foreign relations and other groups, and they all take care of each other. There was a movie made in the late 1960s called The Brotherhood of the Bell, and Glenn Ford was in it, and I knew Glenn, not well, I just knew him in passing, and he was a great guy. He just died recently, and it revealed, and I couldn't believe that they made the film, what the Illuminati's all about. And they control just about everything in the world. And if we don't take control back away from them, then we're not going to have very happy lives, but not so much us. The unhappy lives that are going to be had by children and grandchildren, the legacy that we will have left them, is going to be absolutely dreadful, because we know what's going on and we're not stopping them.
Yeah, and I think we're kind of in a unique generation here, because what they have in store for them, they're not going to have it. They may not have the access to the history and the memory and the understanding of what we've been able to experience or learn about. And that's what, you know, kind of puts me out there in trying to educate, because it is my children and grandchildren that I realize what we're going to be leaving behind if we don't step forward and, you know, take care of this. If we can, you know, like you're saying. So, what would you suggest people do? Do you have any suggestions?
Well, first of all, I think, and I've been saying this for some years now, that people should get into the very rudiments of managing their own finances, and that is get rid of all your credit card debt, revolving debt, just for starters. You're not going to get rid of your house debt, but you may be able to get rid of the debt on your vehicles. And you accomplish that, you've come a long way, because there's a good chance that next year one of you two who are working in the family, the husband and wife today, may not be working, probably won't be working next year. So if you can make it on one income, at least maybe you can keep your home. You should have dehydrated and freeze-dried foods put away for the times when you don't have work and you don't have the income to buy as much food as you'd like to, and you should have a filter to filter water, and you should be able to defend your family, preferably with an assault weapon, because things might get nasty. Then for the people who have done all that, investment wise I recommend gold and silver related assets. I don't think there's any place else to go. I don't know of any place else to go. It's certainly not in the stock market. Because I think it's going down on a Dow Jones Industrial basis, which is trading around 8,700 right now. I think it could get down to anywhere between 38 and 5,500. And unfortunately, I've been right about almost everything for the last 10 years. And so if I continue my record of accuracy, then the economy is not going to be in very good shape. And if you've got one-third of the people in the country unemployed, that's a tremendous problem.
Uh-huh. Well, when it comes to the gold and silver, now you're saying, you know, there really isn't any other place to go, but it even in your letter, it's sounding like that's kind of a hard avenue to even get into if you've waited to this point. Is it?
No.
No?
It's not. No, it's very early because of the suppression of the prices of gold and silver.
Uh-huh.
That suppression has brought about a situation where you're buying these metals cheaper, whether they're coins or bullion or shares. You're buying them cheaper than you would normally at this stage of what's going on. America is bankrupt. Most countries are bankrupt. Many corporations are bankrupt. Half of the banks and brokerage houses and businesses are bankrupt. The world is bankrupt. There's only one real money in the world. It's gold. So why would you want to be anyplace else? I talked to a man today in a foreign country, and I had the same conversation.
Mm-hmm.
He owns extensive amounts of properties. These are apartment buildings and homes that they rent and things like this. I said, you've got to get yourself into that. You're worth millions and millions of dollars. You're going to lose it all. And, you know, they kind of look at you quizzically. And the guy has become, you know, a good acquaintance. He still doesn't get it. He will, because he's very bright.
Uh-huh.
But most people won't. But there's no place to go.
Now,
somebody's going to tell me how that they can keep their assets together, because the stock market's collapsing, and has done so just recently, 8-9 years ago. The commercial and residential property market has been destroyed and is going a lot lower. I mean, do you really want to buy art and hang it on the wall and hope that it doesn't go down in value? Look, during the last depression, everything went down between 60 and 90%. Gold didn't. Gold went up.
Well, that makes sense then. You know, I really appreciate you agreeing to come on and educate my audience as to what's going on and where to begin to look and where to go for your public. You are on the internet at
the you can get a free copy either by email or by surface mail by going to the following. Our site address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, forecaster.com. You can go to our email address as well. If you have a question, too, we answer them all. International underscore forecaster@yahoo.com. International_forecaster@yahoo.com. And toll free, you can call 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And we'll get copies out to you right away. Those who have email, if you send it in right now, you'll have it within a half hour.
Well,
very well-run organization.
Yes, and I really do appreciate, again, you coming on my program. And I hope maybe in the future we can have you back again if you would like.
Whenever you want, just let me know.
Okay, well, great. And thanks again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.